Good afternoon. It is one bell of the afternoon watch. This is your Captain Joe up in the captain's chair for our weekly gathering around the chair on the Voice of Vashon, 101.9 on the FM band, and stream live all over the world, from Singapore on one side of the world to Stockholm on the other, and all of the ships at sea and all of the aircraft in the air and all of the stations in between. A welcome from your captain, and also stream voiceofbashan.org. Got to get all of those things in. So my customary visit to the binnacle list tells me that there are a new members on the binnacle list, and not many that have been able to be taken off the binnacle list and returned to full duty. So know, as always, that your captain is very concerned about all of those, and sending my instructions to the corpsman, to the chief corpsman, and to the medics to do their work and get the job done so that those people can come off the binnacle list and make room for the new ones, because that is part of the human condition. I've talked in the last week with both Singapore and Stockholm. My son Sean is teaching in a school in Singapore, and he has, after this year, he has one more year on that contract, and they will decide whether to come back CONUS, Continental U.S., or whether they will take another school job someplace else in the world. And so it is an interesting place, and in the conversation that Sean and I had over the weekend, we got talking about one of my many interests, and that is about underground railroad systems. Whenever I go into a city that I'm not familiar with, but I know that it has a tube system, the tubes, of course, that's a London term, or any other kind of underground railway system, I learn that system as one of my first tasks so that I can get around the city without having to take the car out of the place where I leave it for the time that we're going to be in a particular city. And I asked Sean whether or not Singapore had an underground system. I should have known the answer to this. I should have done my research, but since I had an intelligence collector on site, I asked him, and he said that it's a very extensive one. And I said, but the Singapore is built on marshes, mostly marshes, and so the construction of that had to have been a very difficult project, and I am going to do some more research on that to satisfy myself that it is safe for my Singapore family to use it. I also had a long and very good talk with my friend, my teacher, my student, Dr. Mark, Professor Mark in Stockholm. And my Stockholm family, I've referred to a number of times on this broadcast. Mark came to Mary R. and me when we were living in Cambridge, and he completed not only his master's degree, but then went on to complete a Cambridge PhD. So when we talk about books, I have... I told Mark that where I was sitting talking to him on the telephone was right across from the bookcase where my most treasured books were, and one of those was his doctoral dissertation for his degree at Cambridge. The title of that book, the title of that dissertation, And I know that you're going to want to write this down because you're going to want to rush to Amazon or Barnes & Noble or whatever the book outlet is if you're in the UK, Smith, to get your own copy. The title of it is Ideas, Interests, and Policy Change in the European Union. And I bring this up for a selfish reason. And the selfish reason is that when, I suppose, centuries ago, when the production of a thesis for a master's degree or a dissertation for a doctor's degree became part of the training and part of the education, a custom grew up in, at least in Cambridge. I don't know about Oxford. I don't know about any of what they're called the red brick universities in the UK. I don't know whether it's a custom here in the States, but in Cambridge I do know, and that is that in the acknowledgement section of every thesis and dissertation, the candidate writes in there some thanks for people that have helped him or her in the completion of the work. And the a doctoral dissertation in Cambridge cannot go any longer than 80,000 words, and I will tell you that 80,000 words is one hell of a lot of words, and it's a very large and very heavy book. So be prepared to pay a very large shipping charge when you get it from Amazon.com, because I know you're going to want it for your personal library. And in the acknowledgement section, after I completed my call with Stockholm, I pulled the book out and I opened it to the acknowledgement page, and I got hit right in the midsection, as I every so often do, because Mark's acknowledgement of the contribution that Mary R. and I had made while we were living in Cambridge and he was doing his student years. And then after we came back to the States, of course, our relationship developed even more. And so he wrote the kindest and most gracious acknowledgement, and it took me back not only to Cambridge, but it took me back to the emptiness that there is in Captain's Quarters. And so I teared up a little bit, and I make no apologies for that. I have, up in the captain's chair, teared up a few other times over things that have happened, and this was one of them. But I have to say here that for both of my people in Stockholm and my son in Singapore, how grateful I am, and how grateful both Mary R. and I were together to have both of you in our lives. I came across the piece about the United Airlines plane that whose starboard engine caught on fire. Port is left, starboard is right. The pointy end goes through the water first and through the air first most of the time. That's how you tell. So the starboard engine, and I talked a little bit about this before, but one of the things that I heard a transcript of the communication between the pilot in command, in military terms, the aircraft commander, to the ground, and he used the word mayday, mayday, mayday. And the word mayday has come to mean I need help. And it occurred to me that maybe some people did not know the derivation of the word, and where it came from, and why we say the word mayday. That seems to me to be kind of a, if I hadn't grown up with it in my professional life from almost the first day at the Coast Guard Academy, I wouldn't have known why we use that particular word. And it comes from the French. The word is M apostrophe A-I-D-E-Z. May day, help me, help me, help me. And when the World War II ended and we started putting together all of the agencies that are part of the United Nations. One of those agencies was the International Civil Aeronautical Organization. And that was established through some meetings that were held in Chicago, and the treaty that came out of that, it was called the Chicago Treaty. And out of the Chicago Treaty came a number of annexes, and one of the annexes is Annex 12, which is search and rescue. And it is on Annex 12, which I believe is 1948. Annex 12 to the ICAO Treaty, Chicago Treaty, standardized many, many procedures that we still use today. And it laid out the basic organization for the international search and rescue system, which we still use today. And among the things that was standardized was the call for help. Mayday, mayday, mayday. Comes from the French word mayday. And now you know the answer to that question, which, along with your desire to acquire a copy of Dr. Mark's dissertation, now you have had fulfilled for you a burning question. Where did the word mayday come from? And there you have the answer. The business about vaccinations. I remind you all that if you have not gotten a vaccination, and now it's possible to get one that has only one shot to it, that if you have not gotten one, that you figure out how to get into somebody's queue. Now, many of Captain Joe's people are veterans. And so I have been waiting to hear from the local Department of Veterans Affairs Hospital when it was my turn to go and get a vaccination. And I keep getting these signals that say, Captain, fear not, because we're working the problem and we're going to get back to you when it is your turn. Well, it turned out that I was able to get one here on the magical isle of Vashon, and I am so impressed with the way that the island people, Vashon Be Prepared, the Medical Reserve Corps, all of the volunteers that have been doing all of this to keep the island as safe as could possibly be done, and in particular the business about testing and vaccinations. So I was able to get the first one last week, and my second one comes up next week. But in the meantime, I got a letter, a postcard, a folded postcard, addressed to John Henry III Wubold. The address is correct. And it is from the James J. Peters VA Medical Center, 130 West Kingsbridge Road, Bronx, New York, 10468. So apparently, the Department of Veterans Affairs, which has in fact, and with some justification, come up with, has been criticized for a number of different things, has they got my name wrong, and somehow or other, the system which reads ZIP codes. ZIP stands for Zone Improvement Plan. There's your second term for the day. Zone Improvement Plan. The system could not read that I was in 98070-8823 instead of 10468. And the card goes on to say it is an invitation. In fact, it's a pleading. It is a begging to come to the James J. Peters VA Medical Center in the Bronx in New York to get the vaccination. The center is happy to offer the Moderna vaccine. If you've already been vaccinated, and was I ever relieved to read this sentence, if you have already been vaccinated or have an appointment to receive the vaccine, there is nothing further you need to do. So what further I needed to do was to get a little bit snarky from the captain's chair about receiving an invitation to come to the Bronx to get a vaccination, and especially because I've already now been able to get the first one right here on my own island, right next door to where the captain's chair is physically located. And so now this card goes into the recycle. Help wanted. Help wanted here on the magical Isle of Vashon. I had hoped when I advertised this position before at the ACE Service Center with Doug, who also is the provider of one of the emergency heads, when we can go back to the emergency head program, a very popular one for my island listeners, that he is still looking for. I had hoped that the strength of my words and the power of the advert would be such that somebody would sign up for this right away. Alas, that has turned out not to be the case. And so I was in the service center a couple of days ago to get a chainsaw chain sharpened, one of the many services that they provide. And I said, I see, Doug, I see out on the front door the sign that says help wanted. That tells me that my efforts so far have not been productive. To which he replied, Captain Joe, you're absolutely right. There was a certain tone of voice there, an inference that maybe I needed to be a little bit more intense on this. So Doug needs somebody to help him in the store. He will train. And in particular, I think he wants somebody who he can train to work on small internal combustion engines, those such as are on weed whackers or chainsaws or John Deere tractors, although he is not an agent for John Deere, but he will service them. And so there's got to be somebody out there that would like a job that I'm faltering here, because as I look through the window of the Gene Boss studio, somebody crossing the street almost got taken out by a very large pickup truck. So, but all is well. Carrying on. So anybody that feels like they would like to change the place where they work, I have known Doug and worked with Doug for almost all of the years that I've lived on the Magical Isle. And I recommend him as an employer. They provide a very, very useful and necessary service. And if you are thinking about looking someplace else for employment, gainful employment, then I recommend that you go to the ACE Service Center right here in the middle of town in Vashon. And you can also find the phone number in the Vashon telephone book, and you can also get it on the web. You can find Doug on the web. Besides the book for Mark's dissertation, and besides the one that we talked about last week, Ship, at the same time that I was extracting Mark's dissertation from my library, I found another one of the Brian Lavery books called The Conquest of the Ocean. And Brian is, just as a reminder, he is the curator emeritus of the National Maritime Museum in Greenwich, England, on the River Thames, which is where also the marker for the prime meridian, from whence all longitude is measured in modern times. And so this book I will be candid and tell you that although it is a very interesting book, it is for the level of scholarship that we expect from Brian, that the bibliography is pretty thin on the ground. The index is even thinner. And my main difference with it is that there is only one that I could find, at least by index search and by bibliography search, only one reference to the Antarctic, and that had to do with James Cook's expeditions to the Southern Ocean. And, of course, there is a lot of seagoing connected with the discovery and the exploration of Antarctica, and that seagoing goes on today. Interestingly enough, Cook was able to locate many of the islands that he discovered. One of them is Franklin Island on the Australia-New Zealand side of the continent, the McMurdo side, the Scott and Shackleton side. Well, that's not quite true, because Shackleton started the Endeavour expedition, Endurance expedition, over on the peninsula side. But on the McMurdo side, the Bay of Whales side, and he was able to place Franklin Island within about 4 nautical miles of its actual position, which was then validated by GPS centuries later. So I'm not as satisfied with the conquest of the ocean. It is a lovingly produced book. It has a lot of information in it. I'm going to be doing some quotes from it. I'm going to talk a little bit about, for example, the Irish immigration in a later broadcast. So, but the one with of the Lavery books that many of you may already know about, he did many of the series called Anatomy of the Ship, in which a particular ship is taken apart in beautiful drawings and paintings to take away the shell plating and look inside the ship. And there are a number of those called The Anatomy of the Ship. Brian Lavery, and I'm a little disappointed in The Conquest of the Ocean. That is not to say that I don't recommend that you get it. If you are looking for a book that has a lot of general information in it, but the one called Ship is the one that I talked about last week, and that one I am particularly fond of. It just has an enormous amount of information, beautiful photographs and paintings, and much better bibliographed and indexed. So... So now I'm finished with the book report. Our polar star is back from the Arctic. Yes, from the Arctic. The first time that she'd been to the Arctic for many, many years. And the reason why she went to the Arctic was that the resupply of the U.S. base at McMurdo was canceled for this year because of the virus. The National Science Foundation and all of the other countries which are doing investigations down on the continent either cut back or eliminated, postponed many of those investigations. And so there was no Operation Deep Freeze this year. So because Healy, of whom I am the sea daddy, I am her sea daddy. We've talked about that before, and we probably will again. Healy had a very serious fire in one of her main motors, and so she had to come home on one screw and has had the offending motor taken out and a new one put in. They cut a hole in her side and took the old one out through the hole and put the new one in through the hole. And so she was not able to keep her commitments, and so Polar Star kept those commitments. And last week, the captain and Polar Star did an interview on the Seattle Public Broadcasting System station, KUOW, with Bill Radke. And it has been archived on the KUOW website. You can listen to it. And if you go in with Bill Radke, he's the host of that program. He gets a whole hour every day. I'm not sure about every day, but he gets a whole hour I could go on pontificating from the captain's chair easily for a whole hour. So, so anyway, if you're like to hear Polar Star's point of view about a deployment to the north, that's one of the area. One of the things that he discusses is the difference between Arctic ice and Antarctic ice, which we covered in some detail last week, and also the difference of working under the lights in perpetual darkness as against working in perpetual sunshine, which is what you do down in Antarctica on the resupply mission. So it's a very interesting interview. I confess not complete agreement with all of his impressions, but it's worth listening to if you are interested in things polar and anything having to do with ice and icebreakers, which, of course, for me is a matter of incredible and constant interest. I talked last week about this gal named Joanne, Joanne Rideout, who does shipreport.net out of Astoria, Astoria, Oregon, which is at the entrance to the Columbia River. And on her website, she had a ship store. And in the ship store, there is one item for sale. And it is called the Quick Guide to Ship Watching, the Columbia River Ship Report. So I bought a couple of them, and I haven't had a chance to read it over in any detail, but it is a delightful little folder. It's got one, two, I won't count the pages. That's beyond my pay grade right now. But it has a lot of information. And I will comment further on it, but you can, if you're interested in getting one of these, if you are interested in ships and what ships look like and what they do and how they do it, you can go on to shipreport.net, go to the tab that says ship store, and you can buy one of these things. And Joanne, if you're listening, and I know that you will be listening to some of these because I hope we can do interviews back and forth. If you're listening, the postage on this thing was almost as much as the price for the folder itself. So if you want to bump the price up a little bit to cover the postage, that would sure be all right with me. So we've got now three classes of ships that I am concerned about stability problems. We've already talked about car carriers like Golden Ray. Golden Ray, by the way, is lying on her side in St. Simon's Sound and in the approaches to Brunswick, Georgia, and is being cut up. And the vehicles, she had 4,200 vehicles in her. They are all still in her, and they are part of the damage that some insurer is going to have to cover. She's being cut up. There have been a number of other accidents with car carriers where the cargo, i.e. motor cars, have slipped their moorings, and when the ship rolled, she kept right on going. So that's the first class of them. The second one is that the Maersk Line, one of the large Maersk Line ships, in this case, Maersk Eindhoven, lost some containers off of the coast of Japan. This is the third major loss of containers in just the last couple of months, and the second one by the Maersk Line. All the Maersk ships are Danish ships. They have the light blue livery. And if you take a look at, you could call up Maersk Essen or Maersk Eindhoven. I know they're fleet mates, and I think that they are probably in the same class. So take a look at them, and you'll see how they are loaded with all of those containers high and wide. And those containers high and wide, all of them move and shift when the ship is rolling. In the case of Maersk Eindhoven, which was the end of February, she lost her main engine. They only have one great big diesel engine. And she lost that, lost oil pressure, and the engine automatically shut down. She got into the trough. She started rolling, and she rolled over about, I think, about 250 containers. So that's the second class, which has attracted my interest and my concern. And the third one are ships that carry live livestock. In coming from New Zealand to headed to China, at the before the end of the year,